Oh, snap. Episode 474 of the Comedy Film Nerds podcast.
Inching our way.
Post-Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. We're inching our way up to episode 500, and we're inching our way up to episode 100 of the spoiler. Perhaps there's a big 600th celebration.
In the future. Yes, it could happen.
Maybe things are starting to come together for that.
Maybe December-ish, if the timing works out. Mm-hmm. You know, who's to say?
Yeah,
who knows?
Maybe there's already dates being worked on.
I don't know. I just have no information to give. I have no,
We both don't know what's going to happen with our own show.
it's just very vague. I don't know.
Cryptically, as though somebody else is in charge of this channel.
Yeah, it's just when I hear something, I'll let you know.
Same here, Chris. I mean, if you hear anything, please. Might be a December 600.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. You know, we can't promise anything. Yeah.
No, we can't. We cannot promise anything.
But okay. Well, you know, we'll see what happens, you know. I'm looking forward to learning about it. Yeah.
So am I. I'm excited. Yeah. Whenever there's new news that breaks about our show.
All right. We'll have to talk to Neil.
I can't. Yeah. And whatever Neil's working on, it'll be excited to find out. But Comic-Con was a blast.
It was unbelievable.
It's always great to see Rick Myers and everybody.
Every year. And what I love, too, is the rabid fan base that he has for that show. The Kung Fu Movie Extravaganza. It's, you know, always hundreds of people there. And there's always, you know, some people that kind of, because it's a very long show, it's 2.5 hours. Some people leave midway through, but there is that core of people that are there until the last clip drops.
And they come every year.
Yes.
I looked out on the audience. I was like, I've seen that. I didn't. Yeah. I've seen that guy. I've seen that. And they're like, and then there's always some new people who are like, oh, I just heard about it, so I'm showing up.
And when I did the signing for Starburns on Friday, and people from that panel came by and they said, look, we come every year. We love you guys. We think, you know, you guys are really funny, and we never miss it every single year.
It was really cool, that compilation of movies that Wellgo is putting out on their Blu-ray, which we each got copies of. That looks awesome. I'm going to just sit home one day and just...
Martial arts it up.
Close the drapes and just go through some insane films, because the stuff... It was cool what Rick was talking about, how the
How many are on the Blu-ray that we got?
Six, maybe?
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And then there's, you know, and he was showing us the cool stuff that's coming out of because he explains, you know, every year how the Chinese are encroaching more and more on Hong Kong. Obviously, there's protests there, and it's also obviously affecting the Hong Kong movie industry.
Yes.
So they're battling and have been for several years of trying to get their content out, so it's tough. But then, like, Korea is coming up with some amazing stuff.
See previous episode if you want a more in-depth talk about what's going on.
Yes. So we just, listen to that episode that came out last week where we talked to Rick about that. So,
Graham, we have a first-time guest.
But
we've known him forever, and I just can't believe it's taken this long to get him on the show. Well, he's been a very busy gentleman. He's a comedian. He's a writer. He is an actor. He reality and scripted.
Oh,
and he just started his own podcast.
What,
ladies and gentlemen? Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Were you waiting for me to say it?
I like building up the anticipation.
Wow, that was like a roller coaster. It click goes to the top and then stops, and you're like, "Oh God, we're gonna have to walk down."
Ladies and gentlemen, Adam Ferrara.
Hello. Thank you. So who the hell is in charge of this show?
I don't know.
I don't know what's happening to the Valley of Death Road, the 600. But not till December.
Yeah.
It's good to see you guys.
Yeah, man.
We have known each other forever. We were doing the math before we were on the show.
Yep, yep. A lot of Tahoe improv dates together.
I did. Yeah, we did. We did that together. We did Vegas together.
Vegas, yep.
And me and you did Tahoe together.
I remember that.
Yeah, we had hope.
Yep. There's all these big show business deals that were going to happen.
Yeah. All these things were going
to
happen.
Now, you've been on everything from Top Gear to what was the Dennis Leary cop show that you were on?
That show was called the cop show was called The Job.
The Job.
Fireman show was called Rescue Me.
Mm-hmm. And you're on a new CBS streaming show now, right?
Yeah. Is this about another municipal worker type?
No, I get cops. Here's what I get, Graham. I get cops. I get firemen. I used to get gangsters kids. Now I get gangsters.
Oh.
But I'm always the gangster that has a conscience. You're like, he sounds it, but he's not a killer. So that's what I get.
I don't want to whack him just for money.
Yeah, listen, it's not that he didn't earn it. So I get all those things, those characters. No, the new show is it's called Why Women Kill. It's from Mark Cherry, who did Desperate Housewives, and it takes place in three different decades: the '60s, the '80s, and current day. And it's about three different couples that apparently ends in murder. I'm in the '60s, which is really cool.
Good,
because I get to wear like all these period clothes. And the only thing I did learn is I can't get a haircut because they got to grease your hair down.
Right.
And I had just gotten a haircut and they greased it down and there wasn't enough hair, so I look like Ming the Merciless. There's one episode where it looks like it's just clipped onto my head.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just, yeah, go Flash, go. You know, I'm just.
Did they have to add hair to you?
No, they didn't. Thank God. That's the one thing. You know, you get up in the morning, you look in the mirror, like, hold on, boys. I still got the hair. Yeah, the will to go on's a little shaky,
right?
But I still have the hair, and the knees are creaking. But yeah, so I learned. So, but it's a fun show. Lucy Liu is in it, and a bunch of other people. It's a lot of fun to do, and it's on CBS streaming in August.
Where do you shoot it, or where did you shoot it?
The location stuff, the exterior locations, is Hancock Park, and it's at Radford. The interiors at Radford, and then there's the exteriors are all location stuff.
Boy, I got to say, you know.
Here's the thing about Radford, because I live in Santa Monica, and my wife is a very, you know, she's a very spiritual being. She's like, tell the universe what you want, be specific, and have an open heart. I said, okay, I want a series that runs for another 10 years. We got enough money to call it quits, and I want to shoot it at Sony. And she's like, why? Do you like what they do at Sony? I go, nah, right near the house.
Yeah, go 15 minutes from the beach, baby.
Don't have to go over the hill. You know?
Culver lot, nice and easy. Park. Yeah. There's parking there.
Yeah, yep. Parking, yeah.
I drove here from Santa Monica. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, you were there. Yeah, it's like, it's nice because it's away from all the crap, but you're down there and you're just like, I
was surfing this morning and I was like, I got to drive on the 405 and there's an accident. And I get out of my car and it's 148 degrees.
Yeah.
There's this wolves.
But at least
people.
The property taxes suck.
Yeah.
That's the thing. My wife, because my property, you know, my property taxes. And my wife is like, well, you know, it goes for the schools. I'm like, I know. We don't have any kids. What am I doing? I'm enrolling in the 7th grade. I'm getting my
good
money.
For you.
That's what I'm going to do.
I would.
They're going to give me a trophy for everything.
I know.
With this kind of money.
I just want to play baseball at Santa Monica High School. So that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah? You're a baseball guy?
Yeah, I like baseball.
Yeah? You?
I like baseball as well.
I would have guessed kung fu.
Yeah. Yes. Martial arts.
Yeah.
Karate. Karate.
Chris,
not
Chris
kung
likes
fu.
Baseball and kung fu together.
Karate.
Yeah. Karate. So
let's talk some movies.
Yeah. Let's do it. Yeah. I saw Lion King over the weekend because I'm the only one here in this room with children.
Yeah.
So
the issue was he saw it without the kids.
Yeah.
That worked out.
Well. Daddy needs his time.
Yeah, everyone got grounded, and I'm
even
the one.
Your wife.
Yes, and I'm the one that got punished by having to see this movie. here's the thing about this movie. I'm watching it, and I'm thinking, wow, I think this is some kind of achievement.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen a movie that is technologically amazing and stunning like nothing I've ever seen before. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, a vapid, useless waste of time money grab at the exact same time. It was a terrible film. And it was a remake. And everything was just a pale imitation of the animated movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was a completely worthless, senseless, and useless remake. And it was one of those
I want to see that on a movie poster. Yeah. Worthless, senseless, useless.
Money grab.
Money grab. Yeah. Quote.
And I'm trying to look into this movie. I'm trying to find something to like. The only thing I could find is like, well, at least they let James Earl Jones do the voice again.
Sure. Yeah.
So because everyone else was trying to do basically an impression of the better actor that was doing the ones in the original. Mm. So like, you know, I like Billy Eichner, but you know, he's doing a poor man's Nathan Lane.
Right.
You know, it's like you know, nothing in Nathan Lane. Lie down before you hurt yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and he was really funny. You know, and every scene, like Seth Rogen is pooping. I'm like, oh, God, all right. And apparently Seth Rogen's singing skills were so poor that the vocal coach hired for him, that was actually Pharrell Williams, was literally banging his head against a wall trying to extract a fucking good note out of me. It was his quote. But, and, you know, I know he says this kind of as a joke, but it really kind of speaks to the entire problem with this movie. Like, there's no reason for it to exist. You're not going to do better than what was already done.
Yeah.
And everything's just going to look like a pale imitation, at least like with Jungle Book. It's a good example of how to do the remake. But also with Jungle Book, you had source material. You could go back to the Kipling stories and actually do something different with Jungle Book.
Turn it.
Yeah, they went back to the Kipling version versus right. they didn't just do the remake of the Disney
exactly.
version.
Now,
and then they used the technology to help tell that story of
yes.
the Kipling
yeah.
version.
There was an element of why it's being redone.
Right.
And it was also a darker, kind of more visceral story about life and death in the jungle. So the photorealistic animals made a little more sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like here it was like, it's a musical, it's fun, it's funny. And so you have these photorealistic animals that have very little expression or mm-hmm. joy to them. And it just didn't match what the actual movie was. Like, because everything, and this is where it's shown, is like everything from the way the skin and the animals moved on each character was unbelievable. Like, you look like you were looking at real animals. Mm-hmm. That's what was really amazing. You know, just every character design and every photorealistic giraffe deserved a better movie.
Okay, so but you could say that the special effects is it worth to go and see the special effects?
It's worth to see it. Like, you know, I'd say it's worth seeing clips.
Okay.
You know, because you
Fair
once
enough.
You've seen it, I'm like, okay, I got it.
Fair. So this is like you're looking at. Everyone looks at the headline of the first movie. This is the
yes.
retraction.
No yeah,
one's
yeah.
reading.
This
yeah,
is like
nobody's reading the retraction.
This would have been great as a demo reel.
Yeah. This is why Jesus doesn't come back. The
yeah.
original. How do you live up to that?
I know it's pretty.
Yeah.
He walked on water. So yeah. Made water out of wine.
Yeah, watch. He comes back on a Friday on the 405, and we're going. No, we're saved, but we're stranded.
Yeah. I don't even know how you could justify a writer or director's salary for this movie.
So here's,
I mean,
if I hear you correctly, here's what I think I'm going to do. The next time I'm at a theater and I'm going to see maybe two movies back to back, and there's a 20 minute gap, I just poke my head into Lion King for 15, 20 minutes and go, wow, that's amazing.
I got it, yeah.
And then boom, and then slide into my next film.
Perfect, yes.
Okay.
And,
so it's like a featurette.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, and it was weird too because
this is a great featurette.
Yes, it's a sorbet. It's you're cleansing your palate
you
between two features.
I love
it.
You know, because the original movie came out in the 90s, but it was 2D animation. But here's how crazy beloved this movie is. It's even, I don't know if you remember, a couple years ago they released a 3D version of the 2D animated movie in the theaters.
Mm.
That made over $100 million.
Right.
That's how crazy people are for this. I'm in the theater watching, and there was a lot of people there, but not just kids. There was also adults without kids.
Creepy.
I saw a little more cosplay than I was expecting for a Lion King movie. People were, like, bringing stuff to, like, Simbas and stuff with them. People had, like, Lion King
to
shirts.
To a movie?
And, yeah, and these were, like, these were adults had them.
Were they standing up at the end?
That would have been great, but
well, I mean, because what it says to, and why I'm sure this
it's
is
a cult.
So
it's
disappointing
a
is,
yeah.
is the original had amazing messages. It had amazing songs. It had, you know, it was really a powerful. It was the thing that when Disney does its movies correctly, is like it's not just a kids' movie with singing and talking animals.
Yeah, right.
It has a powerful message.
It established the franchise for a reason.
Yes.
Yes,
people wanted to be into that orbit more.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so. It does make it disappointing because,
and everything is there because it's one of those movies that like it was like the Beauty and the Beast remake. Don't stray, shot for shot, every beat, every single beat, every single song. It was exactly the same. So all of those things from the original movie are in there. They're just copies. They're just pale imitations of the first movie.
Yeah.
You haven't taken it anyplace.
Nowhere,
no.
Literally nowhere. And there was, I think they added one character like a queen of the hyenas, which was again. Pointless. I'm like, well,
Nathan Lane.
Yeah. That would have been more interesting if it would have been Nathan Lane. But that was like, okay, you made one change that's meaningless. That doesn't, there's a character's in it for a couple of minutes.
I felt the same way about Smokey and the Bandit 3. I was like, really?
Oh, I know. You're
that's
just...
how they got, you know, that's how they got Gleason to do, his agent got him to do Nothing in Common. You know that story?
Really?
Yeah, Jackie's dying. And Tom Hanks, they're trying to get him to play Hanks's father, Nothing in Common. And his agent, he's like, I don't want to do it. I feel good. I don't want to do it. And his agent finally, after a while, looks at was on the phone with him and said, Jack, do you want your last movie to be Smokey and the Bandit 3? And he's like, I'll do it.
Which is great
that
because Nothing in Common is a really good. It's it's one of those movies that like so under the radar.
Yeah, but
not,
breaks your heart.
It's amazing. And the two of them together.
Yeah.
And all of it, you know, Tom Hanks dealing with a father who hasn't taken care of himself and. You know, an aging
yeah
is really Jackie Gleason is like, It was powerful to watch.
He's got such pathos. I mean, and for me, it broke my heart because that's my dad. My dad was Gleason. He was that. Gleason in Smoking the Bandit with a thin mustache and the yelling. That's my dad.
I'm going to go home and kick your mother in the butt. Yeah.
There's no way you can come from my loins. Yeah. Oh, it's great. You want some? Hush puppies, daddy. We got no time for that crap. But just to see and a message where he didn't take care of his kid and he didn't even take care of himself. So I think there was some moment in there where Hanks realized that it's not, I'm not taking this personal, even though I want a relationship. He doesn't know how to do it.
Right.
And then that, just his face. Even the movie Gigo that he did, he was a French deaf mute. He was the lead in the movie, didn't utter one line.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant, if you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, yeah.
Because you can drink and do it. And
that's well, it's the funny thing, like Jackie Gleason's obviously known as the Honeymooners and the big, loud, crazy comedian, and then the Smokey and the Bandit movies. But like, you watch The Hustler?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then you watch Nothing in Common and some of the, I mean, like he, like you
Papa's
say.
Delicate condition.
Oh, man. He's
he
got,
could rip your heart out.
Yes, he could.
Yeah.
He had, like you say, a pathos. He had a pain and a darkness in his heart.
Pryor had that too.
Yeah.
Pryor had that big time for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You watch them in those some of those close-ups and you just go, oh, man.
Yeah.
I think a lot of really good comedians have that.
Mm. Oh, for sure.
You just have to have somebody help you tap into it.
And trust it.
Yeah.
A lot of what we do is, I mean, I don't know about you
guys.
That's
where comedians start, really.
And with pain? Know?
Yeah, because then it develops from there, pretty much. Well, the best ones, for sure.
Is that where you start? So. Mine was pain, and it was the pain of not fitting in, and a defense mechanism.
Sure.
So you get your ass kicked on the school bus.
Well, that's
I got bullied, but, you know.
That's 75%, maybe, of comedians.
Yeah. Well, I think all of us had that sort of... didn't fit in.
Outcasty type.
Had some kind of outcast vibe, somewhere. Yeah. Our neighborhood, our family, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we dealt with it, was the comedy. But underneath a lot of that, with so many comedians, is a lot of pain, some anger. And I think when it's tapped into correctly, when a comedian... And sometimes it takes a like specific director to recognize that.
Mm-hmm.
And because like you were... I think maybe you were about to say this, but like... Well, we get afraid of it.
Yeah.
Because
to trust it. Yeah.
To trust it. Because also, because we're trained in the clubs where silence is like, uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, no, that's a... I remember the first, like, dramatic play I did.
Mm-hmm.
And there was these very heavy, quiet moments in the theater. And I had to, like... not go, oh, fuck, I'm bombing.
Yeah.
No. They're listening.
Yeah. It's the opposite. You want the quiet. If they are laughing there, then it's reversed.
Yeah. Like,
no, you don't want the laughter there.
Yeah. Well, it's also, you're also being seen in a light or in a vulnerable position that we're not used to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't show them your heart when you're doing stand-up. You flash it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But you don't show it to them. And it's the moment between, for me, stand-up is the energy from the audience and my energy going someplace else. When I'm acting, it's the space between the two actors,
mm-hmm.
and there is no audience, and that's the scary part.
Yeah,
especially when I remember when you got to do, I had a Criminal Minds, did an episode of that, and I had to cry because my daughter was abducted. So, and of course, it's the first scene up on a Friday morning at 8:00. So,
right.
I was like, and I've just driven, so I've been up, and it's the first scene, and you know, people just want to go home, and you're a guest star, you're getting two takes, that's it,
yeah.
And we're moving on. So you got to, I just know this, you got to be good. Quick. So I can get to where I can get to emotionally, but it's getting past that spidey sense we have about the room. You know, when you read a room and you know you need to laugh, you need tension and release, the comic relief.
Mm-hmm.
That's innate in us. So it's getting past that boundary to get to where I need to be to cry, which I figured out how to do.
At 8 a.m. in the morning.
At 8 a.m. in the morning. The hardest part is coming back, because now, for me, it's like having Chaz Palminteri in my nervous system, like, now you can't leave.
Yeah.
You opened up this door, here's all the shit you were shoving down here.
Yeah.
And my wife is great. When I came home, I was like kind of twitchy, because she knows when I got a dramatic scene, I'm going to be twitchy. And she's like, okay, you feel better, baby? I said, okay, knock it off, Hamlet, all right? It was Criminal Minds. You didn't do King Lear. Let's keep moving.
You cried, and then they went to a commercial for
that
time.
Yeah. Oh, my God, how's this going to end? And now a word from our sponsor.
Yeah, they're going to catch the bad guy. Yeah. I hate to break it to you.
In 42 minutes.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much kind of what I expected from this film. I was kind of hoping it'd be a little bit more, but you could really tell... The studio just sat on Jon Favreau and said, no, you know what you did with the Jungle Book? Yeah, we're not going to do that here. Just this is here's the movie. Make it again. And
yeah, I doubt you can blame him.
Yeah, I don't think so.
There's no way, because he's proven he's a fine director.
Right.
And the studio just went,
Yeah.
This is Jungle Book isn't like this franchise cash cow.
Yeah.
It's a classic, but it's not what Lion King is.
I wouldn't be surprised if they told him, look, we're putting your name on the movie as director, but you only got to show up once a week. So.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Here's your shot list.
Yeah.
Here's how it's going to shake out.
Yeah. And here's the technical director. He'll be doing most of the work. Yeah.
Who's that? That's the queen hyena. You'll get it. Yes.
And this is the post-super, and they're going to kind of dictate how you're going to walk through this. So checks are going to clear.
We'll still pay into pension and health.
Have a fine afternoon, Mr. Favreau.
Oh, there's no points.
Yeah. So, all right. So, in an counter programming news, you saw The Art of Self-Defense. This is the Jesse Eisenberg martial arts comedy film.
It is it's a small little indie movie, and I loved it. I loved it because it kind of reminded me of a lot of those really solid indie films that came out in the 90s and early 2000s. Mm-hmm. You know, we're so inundated, as was just discussed, with the franchises, the remakes, the sequels.
Yep.
So this movie, and it did a really good job of, this movie gets dark.
Right. Oh, it does.
It does. It gets dark.
How so?
Well, without spoiling it, So this is in the trailer. Jesse Eisenberg is a nerdy guy that gets bullied and stumbles across a karate school, and he's like, "Oh, this, I want this." And the head instructor, the sensei, is this guy. I forget the actor's name, but Aaron, do you mind looking that up real quick? Is who plays this, like, he basically is playing a straight version of the Martin Cove character in The Karate Kid, the guy from the Evil Dojo in The Karate Kid. You know, fear does not exist in this dojo.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that?
Yeah. Get him a body bag, that guy.
Well, this I was looking at the trivia, and it said this was supposed to be a comedy remake of The Karate Kid, like at one point in its development cycle. So
But you know what they did? They made an excellent choice of not going big and wacky.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The characters, they create this world, and there's this tone in this world where this dojo, and it's a city, it's a sort of a surreal place.
No.
It's just a city. We don't know where it is.
Anytown, USA.
Anytown, USA. There is, but even they like establish, so early on in the film, he gets attacked by a motorcycle gang where they all have helmets, and they don't know who it is, and then you hear in the background, on the TV, there's a band of motorcycles.
Wow, that's great.
Thugs coming to get you. Officials are saying you to stay inside. If you do go outside, get a gun.
So it's almost like a monster movie.
Or a knife. Yeah, it's a very... It is. It's this... It's surreal. It's not like real world. He got button. There's real cops and they try to make it. No. It's this surreal world, and then he goes into this dojo and it seems like it's going to be this refuge, but you kind of get the feeling something's off here. Mm-hmm. This guy running the dojo is, something's off. And as that unfolds, it gets dark. But the shit that is said, the characters, and they did such a fine job, the director did a great job, of the actors and the writing, they say these things straight-faced and the actors believe them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're hilarious.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, it's... And I mean, I saw it last night in a theater at like a 10 o'clock showing on a Monday night. It wasn't packed, but it was getting laughs throughout the whole thing. And I was like, there was some hilarious shit in there. You know, all that stuff of like, you know, submitting your opponent, and that's weak. And, you know,
what are the rules of the dojo, Graham?
The rules of the dojo are no shoes on the mat, no food or drinks on the mat, bow when stepping on and off the mat, which is standard. Always bring your belt. Wash your gi, respect your opponent, tap here or tap it, tap or hear snap or hear it snap, tap or take a nap, stay hydrated. If it works, use it. Guns are for the weak. And there's all this stuff in there where he's like, you need to, what kind of music do you listen to? Adult contemporary? That's weak music. You need to listen to metal. You know, and he's just like, what kind of dog do you have? Oh, it's a... is it a German? It's a Dachshund. Oh, so it's a German brand. Mm. German dogs are strong. You know, it's just yeah. all this crazy, hilarious
shit. They sleep
shit.
Facing Poland.
Yeah, it's really, there's just hilarious stuff like that, and how Jesse Eisenberg then takes the training so seriously, and then what transpires.
Is he in a class, or is it like weird private lessons?
No, he's in a class.
He's in a class.
So there's the other
people. Yeah, because in my head, I'm going, how did this go bad?
Yeah. yeah.
Is there a camera in the back?
And well, that's the thing, is there's like the class, and then they keep like, oh, that's only taught in the nighttime class.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why, what do you got to do to get the night? You got to get invited to get the nighttime class. You know, so there's all this like, and the way they talk, and, you know, you see the head, the sensei, starting to play mind games with his students. Mm. And it's like, I was laughing. And then there's some intense stuff in there at the end. And it works because you run the risk of if you go too dark or too wacky and you go outside of this tone that you've established, then I would have been like, oh man, this isn't real.
Takes the audience out of it.
Takes the audience.
So is it fair to say with the sensei is like, he's, I don't know who the actor is, but is he charming enough where you know you don't trust him, but you want to know more about him? Is that the kind of... Because that's the tricky part of it.
What's the actor's name, Aaron?
Alessandro Nivola.
Yes. Alessandro Nivola. So what else has he been in? Like,
he was Nicolas Cage's brother in Face Off.
So he's been a character actor for a while. He's played a bad guy.
Yeah.
So he knows... So there's parts of, yes. So your question is.
That's the, in my head, because I'm thinking like an actor, that's the pivotal role for the movie because you got to be able, he's got to have that push pull kind of.
He's likable and you're like, and you see why everyone wants.
He's smiling, but he's got a knife.
Yes. He knows I can manipulate you.
Yeah.
I'm going to get you to follow me because I'm an excellent martial artist and I'm a really, and so he knows how to lead and command people, which is what it would take to run a martial arts school.
Yeah.
Like, I've studied a bunch of martial arts, so I've met, like, good instructors, and some of them, you can see when their ego comes through. Some of them are true to the beliefs, and this guy, you can start to... At first, you think, oh, he's really true to the beliefs of the dojo and the rules of Bushido, and then you start to see, like...
Why is he trying to sell me insurance?
Wait a minute. Yeah, like, little, like, well, that's a weird... That seems like an ego move, or he's messing with me, or...
That seems like a stretch from the samurai code.
Yeah. Or there's some other... There's a motive behind that isn't authentic or real, or not... It's real, but it's not...
Appropriate.
It's not honorable.
Yeah, okay.
He talks all this honorable, you know, thing. I mean, that was, again, going back to the Karate Kid of... You know, Mr. Miyagi would say when he was talking about the Cobra Kai dojo is he was like, it's not bad students. It's a bad instructor. And this instructor, Martin Cove, is teaching them the wrong thing about combat and pain and hurting people. And so this is, you start to hear some of the language that makes you go, I see why they're enticed by this guy. And then I also see how he's like, manipulating people and getting people to follow, you know, like he's almost like a demagogue, you know, like the way he does it. So, and it's so subtle how the filmmaker does it. The casting is really good. The script is good and direction is good. It's really like, go see this film. This is like, I always want to support these indie movies because they don't get wide releases. And you know, you go to your local Cineplex and there's 12 screens and 9 of them are
Superhero movies,
right. Or the remakes, or the whatever. Yeah. And
Lion King was playing every 30 minutes at the theater.
Right. There's Lion King on 3-4 screens. There's Spider-Man on 4 screens. You know, like, there's all the big budget things. And then there's Toy Story 4. And then there's this thing. And see
at 10 o'clock on Monday
night. At 10 o'clock on a Monday night. You know, like, it's playing in L.A. It's in a handful of theaters. I don't know what it's like around the rest of the country. But honestly, I cannot recommend this film enough. It's so
good.
And I wish I could do a spoiler to talk about the ending and everything because I was like, oh, man, this is really, really cool. So anyway, I can't recommend it enough.
Cool.
All right, Adam, now you saw David Crosby, Remember My Name.
Remember My Name.
So this is a doc.
This is a documentary about David Crosby.
Where'd you see it?
Landmark.
Oh, cool.
Nice. So I had my feet up.
Yes, that's important.
It was
important.
Nice. I got to pick my seat.
Yeah, I love that.
It was lovely. And it was a lot of silver ponytails.
Yeah. Now, not counting David Crosby?
Not counting David Crosby. A lot of silver ponytails. I was with my wife, and I was going, okay. We might be the youngest people.
I'm the youngest.
I might need a high chair for this. But yeah, I was looking forward to it because that the album is I wasn't I was too young when the album came out to have it. I went backwards because mm-hmm. punk was the edge, and I wasn't that angry. And I played the guitar a little bit, and mm-hmm. I remember when punk came out, and I was like, I identified with the energy of it, but I was like, don't these guys rehearse? I can do this, you know, as a guitar player. So I was looking forward to seeing this. Apparently, heroin is bad for you.
What?
Yes.
That's
I don't know
new.
If you want to believe the propaganda.
Yeah.
But so I was looking.
Is that a theme?
Yeah. I thought it was like a health food, like goji berries or quinoa.
The first time they say it's good for you, and then you're chasing it.
Okay.
The first time's like the original Lion King. But everyone's pissed at him. No one's talking to him anymore. He was in three great groups. He was in the Byrds. He was in Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. No one's talking to him.
Really?
Nobody's talking, and no one tells you why. I know what Neil Young, they mentioned why is because he said something about his new girlfriend on a radio interview, and they aired it, and that's why Neil Young is pissed at him. Graham Nash actually, and they didn't even agree to be in it. You could see that the interviews they took from Graham Nash and everything else was from another project. They just lifted the interviews to talk about David. And, you know, he's 70-something years old. He's had 8 stints in his heart. He had a new liver. They don't mention it. He's the father of Melissa Etheridge's baby. They don't mention it.
Wait, he's the father of Melissa Etheridge?
So you had to get all this information.
I just knew this going in. He was the sperm donor, if I'm not mistaken.
I can either confirm or deny that.
Can we look that up? He is. Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
And he played the dojo guy.
Yeah.
No, he is. Yeah, that's why everyone's mad at him.
And they don't
ran this asshole dojo.
Yeah, this is why I was disappointed. There were so many questions of, I'll find out about this and how that happened. They don't even bring it up. They show him going to play these lousy gigs, you know, at 70 years old by himself in these little theaters. And they cut back to footage. It was a great scene with him, actual news footage of a Beatles press conference where he's in the back and they actually ask who he is. Which is cool. He hates Morrison because Morrison was a one night at the Whiskey.
Morrissey? He hates Morrison?
No, Morrison.
Okay.
Morrissey likes, but he makes him cry.
Yeah.
No, he hates Jim Morrison.
Really?
Yeah. The reason that I got from that is one night at the Whiskey A Go Go, he was drunk or high or something, and Jim Morrison came over and took his sunglasses off and said, "You can't hide from me." And that was the big infraction, so he's had that. The guy's been dead. Since 1970.
Well, that's a good thing to hold on to for 4 decades.
Yeah. He's doing a scene up in Laurel Canyon. There's a picture of Morrison. I still can't stand him. I'm like, the guy's dead.
Yeah.
Let it go.
He took your sunglasses off? That's
again, no reason for, give me the reason for all this, why people won't talk to you. Graham Nash said he ripped the heart out of CSN, and he ripped the heart out of CSNY. Why? I don't want to talk about it. What is this, my family?
Yeah.
Are you sweeping everything under the rug? So I was going there to find, as a fan, to get questions answered, and I didn't get one.
Is this the first documentary that raises more questions than it answers?
Well, that's what they should put on there. A senseless grab of money.
Yeah.
But and my disappointment was Cameron Crowe actually conducts the interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And
the ones that they actually did.
Yeah, the one he did with him. Okay. He's at the house, and he was the executive producer. And mm-hmm. at some point, didn't you know? As a fan, as a music fan, don't you say we really need to answer these questions, Damon?
Yeah, yeah.
No, nothing. You accomplished nothing in it.
Well, maybe there is an entire archive of footage where Cameron Crowe did ask those questions.
Yeah,
that were answered David Crosby, I don't want any of that in the movie.
Well, that's disappointing because it's what a missed opportunity. Yeah, those things. I didn't know any of those things that you brought up that you already know. So I'm
going to find out.
You should have made the documentary.
Yes.
Yeah, that would have given us more insight.
If all those things were answered, I'd be like, I'm going to go see this today.
Yeah.
But now it's like...
Yeah, it's like, and it's not like it's a movie you need to see the effects on a screen. You don't really need to see it in a theater because it's not that type of... Not that type of production.
I would have liked to have gotten some insight on the character, on the subject. It sounds like nothing was really...
Nothing really was. I mean, he just... And it didn't seem to me like he was... He was upset that this is the state of affairs, but it didn't seem to me like he's... was genuinely making an effort to correct it. I mean, they even said, like, well, why don't you just go knock on Neil's door and say you're sorry? He's like, I don't know where he lives. That was the answer.
Wow.
I don't even know where he lives. You know,
he's just a bitter old dick.
Yeah. I'm like, it's go on. You can find it on the internet. I'm pretty sure.
Why don't you go on eBay and buy one of Jim Morrison's sunglasses and break it?
Make
and
peace then, with the dead guy. Start there.
Yeah, and then and then put the remains on his grave. Then you're even.
Yeah. But I wanted it. I wanted more. I went in with a lot of expectations, and nothing was really satisfying. It wasn't an answer to anything. I did enjoy when they went up to Laurel Canyon because they drove down Sunset, and all the stuff that they did in the 60s, all that stuff is still here. The whiskey's still here. Mm-hmm. The house that they wrote Our House about, that Graham Nash wrote Our House about, is still there. So he's outside looking in, which was pretty cool. He talked about Joni Mitchell, how he was in love with Joni Mitchell. And there was a couple of selfless moments that I thought were great. Grant, after he met Joni in Florida and brought her back here and exposed her to this Laurel Canyon scene, they broke up. And he said, I produced her first album. I don't think I did a very good job, but I did capture what she was about. And I was very glad that her and Graham ended up together. Graham Nash, not you. Her and Graham Nash ended up together because Graham was the right guy for her. So he had that kind of selflessness. To be able to see that. But then the rest of it just was like, come on.
What a bummer.
I mean, you feel bad for him because he's got like 8 stents in his heart. He's diabetic. He's like, he's in rough shape. He's got somebody else's liver. They didn't even mention that. Hmm. You know?
Wow.
Was that the trade? He has Melissa Etheridge's liver.
Yeah, I'll give you the baby, but I need a liver.
A baby for a liver. Yeah. I think seems fair.
Yeah.
And that's such a bummer because I would have loved to see.
I don't even know where she lives.
I don't know where she is. I could put this in the mail.
Yeah.
I would love to see if they would have been able to get the interviews with the Neil Youngs and those guys going.
Well, apparently, they don't want to talk about it. Because I went on YouTube and I found the interview from the clip they showed in the film of Graham Nash. And they actually asked him the question, well, what happened? How did he rip the heart out of it? I don't want to talk about it. Graham Nash doesn't even want to talk about it.
Yeah. Wow. So it was a documentary that no one wanted to make or talk about.
But James Earl Jones does the voice.
Yeah.
He can still sing.
Right.
How do you present that to investors? We're going to make a documentary, but it's not going to answer any questions, and no one wants to talk about it.
Yeah. I think the same way they said, Jon Favreau, your name's going on it. Cameron Crowe, David Crosby, give me money.
Okay. Right.
Right. That's all you had to do to sell it. Yeah. Cameron Crowe, David Crosby, they went, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because a doc like this has probably got a $500,000 to $1 million budget.
Mm.
It sounds like even less.
It didn't seem like there was a lot of, you know... What are you paying for?
Yeah.
They went on a road with him with a small crew. It wasn't...
Probably went that. The travel cost, probably some licensing fees to some old stuff.
Yeah, and again, the licensing fees to get the interviews.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were high.
Yeah, and the footage, I mean, the historical footage, the Beatles thing was cool. You're probably right.
Licensing fees, post, and a little bit of travel.
Mm-hmm.
$1 million.
That's it. But at least it didn't answer any questions. Insurance.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad it's more vague.
What do you want for $1 million?
All right. So, well, David Crosby, see this documentary if you want to be befuddled.
Yeah. That's
why it was made.
I wasn't that confused about David Crosby until now.
Yeah,
until
I saw this documentary about his life.
Yeah, remember my name. Well, it should be David Crosby. Don't ask any questions. Yeah.
So, Graham, we've got some Patreon sponsors.
You know, Chris, I'm so excited, and I really appreciate the Patreon folks.
They come by every month. It's been great.
God, love them.
A lot of recurring Patreon sponsors and one new one. Mm-hmm. Johnny Roland's promoting his novel Green Cheek, A Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. It's on Amazon in both digital and hard copy. It's an experimental stream of consciousness novel, which follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and her mortal lover T.S. on a journey through time, dreams, and the hidden places of a supernatural America. HappyHorrorShowProductions.com, HappyHorrorShowProductions.com. Fanboy Planet is a website and podcast for all things geeky and amazing. Check out interviews with industry insiders and artists, FanboyPlanet.com, FanboyPlanet.com. And from Chris Parker Howard, Coffee Over Suicide, a dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. New episodes every Friday wherever podcasts are found. Check them out at CoffeeOverSuicide.com, CoffeeOverSuicide.com. And Alice Frazier, co-host of the Bugle podcast and host of Tea with Alice, brings you a series of 3 genre-bending solo stand-up shows that explore the boundary between comedy and tragedy. They were recorded back-to-back as a 3-hour show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival with a binaural microphone, which creates an intensely immersive listening experience. Check out alicefrazier.com with an S, alicefrazier.com. And the Art Podcast with Rebecca Evans. When we move past hesitation, we're true to ourselves, we find our own art in life. New episode with artist Mickey Caputo, theartpodcasts.com with an S. And an Aussie noir book, The Murder of Jeremy Brooks. The police said it was a mugging gone bad. She thinks it was a targeted attack. So check out this Australian thriller. More info at tonymcfadden.net/JB. Tony McFadden, MCFADDEN.net/JB. All right. Thanks, Patronies.
Yes, we did it. Mm-hmm. We appreciate everybody. You go to patreon.com/comedyfilmnerds. You can support the show at any number of levels. If you do $50 a month, we'll read your business like Christus did. So that's fantastic.
And Graham, we've got some trailers.
Oh, my God.
And they are queued up. Now, this one, there's two trailers that I picked, even though with all the stuff that dropped at Comic-Con, these are still two trailers that people are going nuts over on the internet for different reasons. So let's check out the first one, Top Gun Maverick.
Maverick. I'm excited for this.
Every time I heard this was announced, I thought it was a joke. Like, well, they're not really going to make that movie.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Now there's a trailer.
The nice thing about Tom Cruise at his age...
Hold on.
What?
Something's not plugged in, Aaron.
Sorry, the audio cable's not plugged in. It's on Chris's side of the table.
How old is Tom Cruise? I think he's old enough to board the plane early, no?
57 years old. Wow.
57 years old. Is this one it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey. So he's, you know, people say like he's 57, but you got to remember actors and actresses in Hollywood have a staff of people to make them look younger. Everything from nutritionists
How do you get that?
Yeah, to, you know, dietitians, to personal trainers. It doesn't just happen. You know, it's probably hundreds of thousands of dollars spent into staving off the aging process.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Some are more successful at it than others, for sure. And Tom Cruise also has a warlock that helps him.
30 plus years of service. Combat medals. Citations. Only man to shoot down three enemy planes in 40 years.
Danger zone.
Yet you can't get a promotion. You won't retire. Despite your best efforts, you refuse to die.
Well, Tom Cruise not needed for any of the trailer shots so far. It's a plane and a hand.
I'm so in.
It doesn't even matter.
It don't matter.
Well, here you are. That's Ed Harris.
Yeah.
Captain. What is that?
Apparently he doesn't have the nutritionist.
Yeah.
It's one of life's mysteries, sir.
You've never made it past captain? I love it.
At 57, he's still captain?
Oh, God. Tom Cruise is like, I need to fly this for real.
Now, Graham, you did tours of military bases. Were there a lot of 57-year-old pilots?
That rode on motorcycles and looked like Tom Cruise?
Yeah.
Not that I've seen. Oh, there's another volleyball scene?
Oh, there's got to be another beach party.
Sure there is. Are the Russians the bad guys again?
They have to be. First of all, there's snow. Or they're going after Seattle.
Your kind is headed for extinction.
Or Canada.
Maybe so, sir. But not today.
Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah, I'm in.
I'm in. Come on.
It's gonna be, you know, it's gonna be this. I'm gonna enjoy it again. But it's not means I'm not gonna laugh. Talk to me, Goose.
Of course.
There is a built-in audience that will see that movie.
I'm one
regardless.
Of the people.
It's us.
Built-in.
It's guys in our age group who saw this movie when we were in high school and are like, yeah.
Here's also a built-in audience to see this next. Movie,
oh,
which will not be us.
Cats.
This is Cats. Finally, they made a Cats movie.
Oh, meow, 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 meow. Mm.
Now, this could have used a CG makeover. Just make them actual cats, not weird human cat hybrids with.
Human cat hybrids.
Oh my God, it looks so creepy.
Yeah, I can't get past that willful suspension of disbelief. You gotta bring me a little further.
I feel like this is asking for an unwillful suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
Why are cats wearing coats?
Yeah. If you
meaning of what. Okay, but they are in human homes.
Mm-hmm. They did make big sets to make them look small. Uh-huh.
They're big chairs and big beds. Okay, I take back my initial impression that this is for a certain audience. I don't think this movie's for anyone.
I think people are going to love it.
Really?
I do.
Good cast.
Like King's Speech, very different.
As a choreographer from Hamilton, I think this movie's gonna. I think it's gonna blow up.
Yeah.
I think musical nerds.
Yeah.
I think they're gonna love this.
This is everything you need.
Yep.
I don't know. This could be a musical Showgirls, where it blows up for the wrong reason. Judi Dench is a cat overlaid with.
I'm telling you,
graphics.
Chris. You, if you think like a musical theater nerd, you're gonna love this.
All right, I'm skeptical. You guys think it'll explode? I think it will implode.
I think musical theater nerds are gonna love it.
Yeah. Right.
Somebody just watched the Maverick trailer.
This 8.4 million views.
Yes.
Just for the trailer alone.
89,000 likes, 223,000 dislikes.
Mm-hmm.
If that's we're not going to watch this trailer.
That tells you that there's definitely people watching it for sure. So, yeah, I'm actually curious to see how it plays out because that's the first trailer.
Uh-huh.
Let's see what the next trailer looks like. The other thing, which is interesting, too, sometimes with movies like this, the trailers are showing you a early version of the visual effects.
Yeah.
So it's entirely possible, like, there are certain tweaks to the character designs and facial expressions might actually change as the movie progresses. You know,
I heard there was outrage they had to cut the litter box scene.
But if you look at it like Les Mis and Moulin Rouge, those movies did quite well.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So this will too.
Mm-hmm.
I just, with the 8.4 million views.
Yeah, they're just not talking to us.
Yeah, it's not for us. Just like none of the people watching that trailer watched the Maverick trailer and went,
yeah, just like us.
They went, oh, God.
But,
well,
no, but no one watched Les Mis and go, oh, all the characters look really off-putting and make me uncomfortable.
Mm. But that was the point of Cats, though. Cats was off-putting when you saw it live.
Yeah.
This is not for you.
No, I concur.
You know?
So, okay.
All right, so let's see how it does. I wonder if it'll, I wonder if it'll get nominated for like any musical awards.
It will.
For, you think, yeah.
Yeah, there's a little bunch of money behind it and talent.
Well,
and
you know it'll get the crazy Golden Globe category, musical or comedy film.
It'll get nominated for costume. It'll get nominated for soundtrack. It'll get nominated. You
maybe
know,
even set design for giant chairs.
Set design, yeah. Big Lily Tomlin chairs.
Yeah.
It'll the Lily Tomlin Award.
Mm-hmm. All right, Graham. So we have some DVD and Blu-ray releases.
Oh,
we have Alita Battle Angel. The best compliment I heard for this film was like, you know, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. That's the best I've heard about this movie.
It didn't suck hard.
Yeah.
I'm like, I haven't been on a flight long enough yet to justify watching this.
No, me either.
But I'm going to Russia in September, and when I do that, I'm sure I'll watch this movie.
Oh, you'll be able to watch 8 movies.
It'll be
what is the flight from...
Well, it's a bunch of flights.
Oh,
it's like you go L.A. to Newark, Newark to Geneva, Geneva to Switzerland. So it's like
no, you get a lot of movies in.
Yeah,
and Hellboy, the
Newark's
new
the worst stop.
Yeah, you have the worst.
They're
the most
never on time
there.
In Newark. They're never on time, and LaGuardia too, because the runways are short. So you come in. Oh well. Yeah. You know you're in trouble when you land and the flight attendant's kissing the ground like, we made it again!
I was the first time I ever flew into LaGuardia, I was like a kid. I was like 11 or 12 years old, and I was like, I just see water, I just see water, I just see water. Yeah. Where's the runway? And then it just pops up at the last second, and you're like, oh, that's off-putting.
So, Hellboy, speaking of a plane, I saw the first half on an airplane. Mm-hmm. All I needed to see.
Okay.
That was, it was not a good movie. Although we had a guest talk about it. Was it Mike Siegel? Saw it.
I believe so.
Everything he said was pretty much dead on, and he didn't read the comics, so he didn't even know how accurate he was. Like, he was saying, oh, it feels like it was taken from all these pieces of different stories, and I'm watching it, and we talked about it before, it's exactly what happened. Like, they have all these, Hellboy has all these intricate storylines that span different times and places and legends and mythology, and the worst thing you can do for an hour and a half to 2 hour film is take a scene from each one of those stories and then put it together like you're watching some weird supernatural highlight reel. And that's what happened to this film. It wasn't a coherent story. It wasn't the characters like made no sense because you're seeing them for one scene each. And then even like the character designs, like even Hellboy looked off or weird. Like I thought Guillermo del Toro's films were fantastic. I mean, Ron Perlman, he really looked like Hellboy, but
with the two urinal cakes on.
Yeah, yeah. And I always thought they were goggles at first, but
But they never came down.
Yeah, yeah.
Ever.
They were because that's his horns he shaved off. So I'm watching this and I'm thinking, like, they couldn't get the tone right, they couldn't get the story right, and it was one of those movies where no one knew what to do with the franchise. So what they did is they concentrated on, like, let's make it weird and scary and we'll curse a lot and make, like, you know, just make it violent. And they had no idea what to do with the characters of the story. So the first half was a mess. I can only imagine what the second half was. But
yeah, when they made Batman darker, there was it was a cohesive darkness and we're going to do this and it all fit.
And it they didn't grab source material from 20 different Batman stories, you know, for one movie. It's, you know, they grabbed a lot from Dark Knight and, you know, and even the Nolan ones grabbed a lot from, like, the, was it The Long Halloween, I think it was? One of the noir stories. And but this one, it was like, what are you doing? I mean, yeah, these are all great stories, but, you know, if you're grabbing one scene from each one, it makes no sense. So it was a real misfire. So, which is a shame because I don't think we're going to see another Hellboy anything for a long time because of this, but it's not Hellboy's fault. And it's not Mike Mignola's fault. It was really
Hellboy's fault.
Yeah, man. And it was real. It was
the game, not the play.
Yeah, yeah. It was a real miss by the filmmakers. Missing Link. This was the stop motion animated movie by Aardman Studios. They always do. Oh no, it wasn't Aardman. It was I think Leica. Aaron, can you check that? Who the studio was for Missing Link? Either one. There aren't that many companies in the world doing stop motion animation anymore. I think there's literally two. It's like Aardman. I think in the UK.
Was this the same studio that did Kubo?
And then, like, that's what I'm not sure of. It's either, there's only two. It's Kubo and Wallace and Gromit. Those are the only two.
It's Wallace and Gromit. It's
Leica. It's Leica. No, Leica is not Wallace and Gromit. Mm-mm. Leica is Kubo.
Oh.
Yeah, it's Kubo. And it's one of those movies that really looks like, again, where the trailers just kind of make it like a goofy kids movie, but that studio always puts cool and interesting things in their movie, but you never know it by the trailer. So it's one of those movies that I kind of want to see because I like the studio, because I know they would do something interesting with it. They did Coraline, Box Trolls, and there was always something interesting in it, every one of those movies.
Oh, by the guy who owns Nike.
Yes, yeah. Travis Knight, and because he did Kubo, and then he went on to do Bumblebee.
Nike does stop motion animation.
Well, just do it.
Well, let me put it this way. Nike's dad funds it.
Oh, okay.
Let's
Why is he in the band? He's got the van. His dad's funding it.
I'm sure that there's that's a factor.
Next frame.
Can we have this character jog or cross trainers at some point?
Well, it depends. Are you the owner of Nike or the owner of the downtown hardware store? Nike? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
My dad has some notes.
Yeah.
He wants...
People are walking too slow.
He wants there to be a fitness scene in this.
Can we use the sound effect to go swoosh?
Yeah, can we...
Where we need a scene where one character shames the other one for not having the right sneakers. Have that somewhere?
Can the bad guy wear Reeboks?
Yeah. And the next movie is Master Z, the Ip Man Legacy. It's interesting how no matter what martial arts movie that comes out, if they can figure out a way to put Ip Man in the title,
they will. In this movie, I don't know how it even got a release here. I don't know if it did.
It got released here for probably not theatrically, but yeah, just DVD.
It got a real. It did not get a theatrical release. I don't think. Maybe it was VOD. But
and the next one is Critters Attack, and interesting. This is starting to happen now. Like in the 80s, there were all of these like direct to video horror movies. Leprechaun was another great one. Ghoulies, all the Full Moon Pictures movies, like. Demonic toys and
Beaches.
Yeah,
exactly. Beaches definitely was one of those.
So it makes sense in like, you know, remake Frenzy that even these tiny little, you know, direct to video horror movies are getting remade because they're keeping the budgets low. You know, they're trying to cash in on the franchise and they're just remaking them all now too. Because I think there was a new. There was a new Puppet Master movie. Like, remember those?
We've talked about this before with low budget horror that you don't need bankable stars.
No,
so
you're selling the genre.
I dare you name one actor in Critters Attack.
I can't even name the critter.
Yes, even after you saw all the headshots, try to name one. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
I don't know any of these people.
Yeah, it doesn't matter because they're not. That's not where they're spending the money.
Can you scream? Put on these Nikes.
Yeah,
you're a movie star.
Yeah. And don't make eye contact with my dad. So Cheech and Chong Critters Attack once again on DVD and Blu-ray.
All right.
And the site Spotlight. And we are still doing the closeout of the Thrilling Adventure Hour merchandise, 25% off for the end of the month. But come August 1st, it will be gone. There is some stuff left. It is going fast. We do have a lot of the DVDs left, but some of the shirts, the sizes are definitely out.
Once it's gone, guys. Yep. No more Thrilling Adventure Hour merch.
Yeah, so check it out, and if you want something, you have to move on it before August 1st, because we will be taking it down then. All right, and premiering this week, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Cannot wait for
this
movie.
I'm so pumped for this.
Yeah. It looks so good.
It looks good, but I want it to be more about the murders, because the trailer's like, well, it could be.
You know? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Could be about Manson.
That's my question, too. Is it about Manson, or is it just about...
I'm a little gun-shy, because I went into the last documentary with questions, and nothing got answered.
Yeah.
So, but I would... make it... Because the trailer's kind of... Well, is it about this Leonardo, this actor who used to be, or is it about the Manson murders? Mm-hmm.
Is it about Brad Pitt being a stuntman?
Yeah, or is it about Brad Pitt being a stuntman?
My guess is, or maybe this is my hope, is because there's that scene in the trailer where... he's hanging out at the Manson family and goes, uh-oh. My guess is they did a good job and made an actual trailer that just teases you. Like, the first third of the movie is basically what the trailer is, and then the second two-thirds are all about him navigating the crazy Manson family and all that stuff.
Because that could certainly happen, because it's a Quentin Tarantino movie, so that means it's between 2 and 3 hours. So there's plenty of things that can happen in that
time. It's nice when the first act is 60 pages.
And he's a guy that would have control over his trailer. He's not going to let the studio cut together a stupid trailer.
Mm-hmm. No.
That reveals too much
if he cut it, it didn't answer the question I wanted going in, you know?
But I think it does what... a good trailer should.
Gives you just enough.
Just enough. It makes you go, I got to find out.
I either got to find, I don't know if I'm going to the movie, but I'm going to find out more about it.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Well, listen, hey, Inglourious Basterds, Hitler died in the movie theater.
So. Ooh, spoiler alert.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. So.
And another documentary coming this weekend is Mike Wallace Is Here. Now,
but only for 60 minutes.
So I have a... And I will say, most likely, the Mike Wallace documentary will probably shed a lot more light on David Crosby.
Let's hope so.
This is where the Crosby questions are answered, is in the Mike Wallace interview. This could be intriguing. Again, if it's done correctly.
Yeah.
There's a lot about Mike Wallace I'd like to know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a great, if you go on YouTube, there's a great interview as a young Mike Wallace interviewing Rod Serling.
Oh, cool.
They're both smoking cigarettes on TV.
Right.
And Rod Serling.
There was probably a cigarette assistant back then to make sure everything was lit
just butane into the lighters. And where Rod Serling's talking about this new TV series, this science fiction TV series called Twilight Zone. And it's so great because at that point, Serling had written a lot of Playhouse 90 and those live TV. And he talks about in the Mike Wallace interview how the sponsors would censor him. So he's like, for bringing up hard social issues and racism and all this stuff. And he goes, no, this new series is just fun science fiction, which is so hilarious when you know the hard social commentary of The Twilight Zone. Rod Serling went, okay, if I put it in outer space, I can talk about anything and they won't bother me.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's what he did. And it's a fantastic interview. It's just, go on YouTube. It's Mike Wallace and Rod Serling from like 1959.
It's such an influence too. You know, you could see that influence in Gene Roddenberry when he made Star Trek and the morality plays when he put in the shows. It's like, oh yeah, well, Twilight.
Frank Gorshin's half black, half white. It's a space movie. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a space TV show.
What's the problem? It's like Rod Serling wrote the original Planet of the Apes.
Yes,
which is scathing commentary on the human race. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm excited for this Mike Wallace interview. Hopefully, they'll have that Rod Serling thing in there. But regardless, go online and watch Mike Wallace interview Rod Serling.
That's online now?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah, I'll check that.
Black and white, cigarette smoke, grilled cream.
I'll walk a mile for a camel.
It's fantastic. They probably both got cocktails in front of them. Oh, it's fantastic.
So, oh my God, that is our show.
That is it.
Covered a lot of material.
Lock it down. Yep, post it up.
600's coming.
It's right around the corner, kids.
So, Adam, where can people find you online?
You can get me at Adam Ferrar, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I just launched a podcast today, actually. So,
congratulations.
Thank you. It's called the Adam Ferrar Podcast. 30 minutes, you'll never get back. So it's wherever you get your podcast. And Why Women Kill on CBS All Access starts streaming in August.
Any road dates coming up? Or?
Yeah, you can go to my website. I got a couple of corporates. I'm at the Draft House in August in Virginia. I'm at the West Palm Improv the end of August, and I'm taping my new comedy album at Gotham in September in New York City. Yeah, cool. And if I could put out a call, if anyone can find me an access to, I want to see the movie Tear the Roof Off, which was a documentary about Parliament Funkadelic. It was a festival film. Yeah, it was a festival film, I think in Chicago, and I can see the minute trailer, and I can't find it anywhere. So if anybody knows Tear the Roof Off. It's a story about George Clinton and P-Funk. Email me at theadamferrara.com, and you'll be doing a fellow Funketeer a big name. I'm a Funketeer, baby. And hopefully it's better than the David Crosby documentary.
It might
answer some funky questions.
Uh-huh. They better not funk it up.
Yeah.
I did. Remember VH1, The List?
Yeah.
Remember, okay, so I did that with George Clinton. I got a contact high walking past his dressing room.
Dude. Yeah. I did that with Peter Tork from The Monkees.
Yeah?
Oh, that's so cool.
That was, and what's it, I forget his name from In Living Color.
Vernon Reed?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, the other, the lead
the singer. Yeah, I could see his face.
Corey Glover.
Yeah, I did it with Corey Glover.
Who was in Platoon. Yep.
Wow.
He was in Platoon. Peter Tork, in this documentary about David Crosby, Peter Tork gave him $25,000 to buy a boat after he got thrown out of the Birds.
Wow.
Yeah, so McGuinn threw him out. Again, not talking to him. Won't tell me why. he got thrown out of the Birds, and he went to Peter Tork. He said, I want to buy this schooner. And he gave him $25,000. He went down to Florida. And that was the boat that he ran to when the FBI was looking for him.
Peter Tork boat.
Peter Tork board. Yeah.
All right. Peter Tork board. I'm going to write that down. Hashtag Peter Tork board.
Yep. Yeah,
so if you need a boat,
Tork's your guy. That's what we're going. Go to petertorksboats.gov and.gov. Well, Adam, thank you so much for being on the show.
Good to see you guys. Continued success. 600's coming.
It's right around the corner, guys. December, we'll have a date for you. Aaron, thank you so much for everything that you've done on this episode. The other ones, not so much, but today, really good
really
work. Really stepped up. Thank you, everybody, at All Things Comedy. My name is Graham Elwood.
So, we do want to mention,
I'm just going to wrap the show up. We're still going.
Yeah. We wanted to just want to thank everybody who did come down to Comic-Con. Yeah. It was really good.
I jumped again.
We always appreciate seeing you guys at the panel, and I want to thank the people that stopped by for the signing. And if you still want a signed copy of the book of Long Ago and Far Away, you can buy it at comedyfilmnerds.com. Or if you just want the digital copies, they're only $1.99 each. You could get them on Comixology under Starburns Press.
Also, I forgot to say this. Las Vegas, doing the Progressive Comedy Tour this Saturday, July 27th. Ron Placone and myself. And then we have a bunch of dates. The Progressive Tour in September. We're going to Omaha, Sioux Falls, Madison, Minneapolis, and Iowa City. Get all your tour dates at grahamelwood.com.
All right. That's it.
Guys on the
road. Very progressive.
Now we're done.
Now we're done. All right.
I'll show you.
We're all wrapped up. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.